Hey, everybody, you're listening to episode 141 of the Forest Podcast, recorded Monday, September 12, 2011, 6x7. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Forest Podcast. I'm Mike Evans.
I'm Kenneth Love.
And we are your daily tech design development ghosts. We're ghosts because you can't see us. We're sneaking around in your computer.
We're in your house, though.
We're in your house. We're under your bed. We're actually the little monsters. Have you seen that movie?
You know, I saw it like a long, long time ago, and then I've got it on my Netflix queue. I keep meaning to watch it.
It's so good. With Corey Feldman? Or is it the other one?
No, it's not Corey Feldman. It's got a fucking Wonder Years kid.
I thought that was Corey Feldman.
No, it's not fucking Corey. No, it's not fucking Corey Feldman. Corey Feldman was from The Goonies.
Oh, okay.
And then Corey Haim was the slightly older version of Corey Feldman. And they were in...
And they were both in Lost Boys.
They're both in Lost Boys, and they're both in License to Drive.
License to Drive.
License to Drive was much better than Lost Boys.
I believe you. Okay. But, dude, yeah. Little Monsters, you got to go watch that again. It's such an enjoyable movie.
Yeah, it's been a long, long time since I've seen that.
Maurice.
Probably like 20 years since I've seen that. I haven't seen that since before Alex Gaynor was born. Django and Python people know the joke there. So yeah, DjangoCon was this past week.
Yes, that's why we had. That's the only reason why we haven't put out a show in 2 weeks.
It's not the only reason we haven't put out a show. It's the only reason we haven't recorded a show. We haven't put out a show because Mike's lazy.
Hey, whatever.
Actually, no, it's not that Mike's lazy. Mike doesn't know where his priorities lie. He thinks it's more important to play with his startup idea than it is to put out shows to a dedicated audience that we know enjoys us.
People who listen to the show a long time, Blackmagic finally said that they are shipping the little video switcher I've been waiting for last Tuesday or Thursday. I was on the phone for an hour and a half.
They shipped it last Tuesday?
They said
last Tuesday that they would eventually ship it.
No, it said ship it. They changed their status to shipping now, so they should be shipping to distributors. So
wow.
I called around all this morning to B&H Photo and a few other places asking if they had any idea when they'd get their stuff in and whether or not I could put in pre-orders. So hopefully...
And?
Nobody. Not a single... I called like six places, like B&H Photo, Martech, Andromeda Camera, a few other places. None of them would give me a solid date. But they all said that they'd probably be receiving them within a week.
You're never going to get that.
I'm going to shoot myself.
It doesn't actually exist.
I'm starting to feel that. It's such a good deal. I mean, the closest thing is like a New Tech TriCaster, and those things start at $7,000, which ain't never going to happen.
Just make a...
Make my own. Go find
make
some...
Make Kyle pay for it.
Kyle's poor.
I got asked if I was the creator of Forest while I was at DjangoCon. That was kind of funny.
You should have said yes.
I was wearing my T-shirt. I should have. I was wearing my T-shirt, and I was like,
Kenneth,
no.
If someone asks you if you created Forest, you say yes.
You know, if Forest was more impressive, I probably would.
That's a dick
there's
move.
Some,
no.
There's some days, though, that I'm just like, really? You don't know how to assign variables in JavaScript?
There was a point where you didn't.
No.
No?
I was born knowing that. I was like, fuck, man. Var J equals boobs. That's how you do it.
Womb equals Kenneth. What's this binary parser?
Yeah, we're not having a good show so far today. So this is from Vijo, a French web developer. Binary parser. This is binary file parsing using JavaScript. And the look Chris Jones
how enjoyable.
So basically what this lets you do is it lets you parse binary files using JavaScript. So their description of like why this would be handy would be for like a 3D model, right? So you could pass in a 3D model and then you could parse that with JavaScript, and then you can have like a JSON structure that would then represent the binary data that you sent in, so then you could manipulate it or rebuild it using Canvas or something like that, right?
This sounds like something I would never do.
No, something I'll never do either.
I'm not saying it's ridiculous, but I...
It seems a little ridiculous. Let's put it that way. But it's kind of funny. JSON's one of those words that people pronounce amazingly different ways. So, yeah, it's always fun going to a conference just because you get to hear how people say things. Like, in the Python world, we have a server called GUnicorn. So, you get Gunicorn, 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 G-Unicorn, Green Unicorn. Like, all these different names.
Django.
So, Jason became JSON, There's like two or three others that I heard as well. Yes, there, I think there was somebody that said Django instead of Django.
That's important.
I do believe they were escorted out of the hotel and then beaten.
Oh, that's not very nice. That's why you got to listen to podcasts so you know how to properly pronounce things.
Or you could just go read the page on DjangoProject.com that says how to pronounce the word Django.
That's no fun. What if you're illiterate?
Well, you probably can't write code then.
No, you can write code. You've taken the time to learn how to spell just the words that you need for programming.
All right, SketchHub. SketchHub.com. These are social, shareable, zoomable sketches.
Yay.
You got like a big little a big canvas thing here.
I'm not using this. I'm just getting a Wacom little pin thing.
Well, but you can't really share that with your friends and family.
No, because you can write on paper now, didn't you see?
You can write on paper now?
Yeah, they got a new Wacom you can write right on paper.
Right, but...
And I tear off that paper and I hand it to my dear mother.
Right, but what if your dear mother is in Hawaii while you are in, Florida or something?
FedEx?
So you're going to collaborate over a week.
I'm going to give it to Tom Hanks and he's going to deliver it.
Eventually.
This is great. I don't know.
He and his coconut are going to read your mail.
What are the multi-touch gestures for drawing?
I don't know. I didn't read that part. I saw it there, but I didn't bother reading it to find out what it was about. But no, I mean, this looks kind of cool. It's a neat idea.
I like a site that knows what they're talking about because where it has all that stuff you were talking about that you didn't read, there's a big button that says hide the boring stuff and take off.
Yeah, it's like we don't care about – nobody's going to care about this stuff, right? So but anyway, yeah, it's let's see, what is it? You can use your mouse or your finger if you're sitting in front of a multi-touch-enabled device like the iPad or to draw onto the sketch. So I guess that's it. It'll do – drawing with fingers on the iPad as well.
If you try and draw something round really fast, you just get like straight edges.
Okay. Singo's blog. This is from a guy from Croatia.
Sure he is.
Singo. That's what it says on the side. So this is Auto rsync local changes to a remote server. So those of you that don't know what rsync is a really, really handy command line tool that will take a directory or a file or whatever and push it somewhere else, but it only pushes things that have changed since the last time. So that's why it's sync and the R is for like remote, right? So anyway, this is how to use rsync with SSH, and you can tab your local folder and then you can just keep everything updated on a remote server. Don't use this for like deployment. That's a really stupid idea.
No, man, that's how all the cool kids do their PHP stuff.
Oh, well, if you're doing PHP, then that's fine. You're not going to break anything critical.
Oh, that's not nice.
Nobody stores critical data on PHP and MySQL.
That's because you don't like Facebook.
I guarantee you Facebook doesn't fucking use MySQL.
Yeah,
they
man.
Make PHP, but they don't use...
They're using MS SQL or whatever. What was that called?
SQLite.
What's right, the Microsoft SQL?
Yeah,
MS Access?
No. No, not Access. Access isn't MS. All right, so next one is from Web Reflection on GitHub, and it is called Coffee Shit.
This is offensive.
It's the Coffee Script code parody. It's called Coffee Shit.
This is outrageous.
Yeah, no, I think this looks much more readable than Coffee Script. Much, much more readable. Instead of this function declaration here with the arrow and shit, we've got another one with quotes and a lot of brackets and some parens in there as well. No, languages don't have enough brackets and parentheses in them anymore. Nobody writes Lisp anymore.
It's semicolons.
Yeah, we need more semicolons. I want a programming language that uses like pipes. Pipes, interrobangs. I want an interrobang in front of all my variables.
Wait, what's a interrobang?
You don't know what an interrobang is? It's an exclamation point combined with a question mark.
Oh, okay. I didn't know what its name was.
Yeah, it's an interrobang. We're going to go on to the next one. The next one here is from Ideon, who apparently has a bunch of open ideas. And this is a Chrome and Safari extension to rehabilitate disruptive footnotes. So, you know how a lot of places you get a footnote and then it like throws you to the bottom of the page and then you got to either scroll up or click. So what this does, this little extension, it finds those footnotes for you and then puts that footnote into a little modal box looking thing. Right where you clicked the footnote link.
Oh, that's nice. That's
so you don't have to go to the bottom and come. Yeah, it stops them from disrupting your reading.
That's one disruptive thing, but I tell you what I was bitching to Kyle about last night drives me fucking nuts. And it's when you go to places like TechCrunch or these other blogs where they talk about a website and they link and they put a link in the article, except it doesn't go to that fucking website. It goes to another article where they talked about that website. So fucking annoying.
Okay, now wait.
So in other words, if you're...
it's like a middleman website. Like I'm talking about something on the Forest Podcast on my blog, right?
Yes.
And then the link, instead of going to Forest Podcast, goes to, like, Forest, where we then talked about the Forest Podcast.
Right. So a good example is on TechCrunch, right? If you're reading something that's just talking about how, you know, conversations and media have changed via the internet, and then they mention Twitter, and, it, you know, it's Twitter.com, and it looks like a link, you click that, and instead of going to Twitter.com, it goes to TechCrunch, you know, here's something we wrote about Twitter 3 years ago when it first launched or something.
Right, right. Yeah, no, those are really annoying as well.
Makes me want to
stab. Because then they're like, look how awesome I am. Speaking of TechCrunch, you see that Arrington got fired?
Did they finally? I saw something last week where they were looking to
reach out.
Okay.
And then on, what was it, Thursday, Bartz got fired from Yahoo.
Yeah, I told Kyle that if, we should get Bartz. I hear she's looking for a new position.
I think Kyle ought to pitch for Yahoo.
What's really fucked up is that she left. How does that make you feel? It's one thing to get fired. It's another thing that once you get fired, the stock jumps by 5%.
Well, because she didn't do shit the whole 2 years she was there. She was there for 2 years and didn't do shit.
That has to feel so awful.
Well, especially compared to, like, Steve Jobs leaves and the stock just stays, like, exactly the same. Like, people didn't even panic that Jobs was leaving.
They feel that he's probably, you know, left a 6,000-page book of instructions they have to follow until 2025.
He just cloned himself and renamed it.
I just hope it's not Multiplicity then.
Yeah.
A clone of a clone.
All right, next one is deployment.
Yay.
But it's meant like you eat. This is a staging and deployment system for motherfucking WordPress.
Everybody loves deployment. And everybody
they
loves
do.
WordPress.
Yeah, they do. But those two things don't go together very often.
No.
But no, so what this is actually kind of cool. It will deploy to multiple different subdomains. So if you want to have like a development subdomain and a staging subdomain and whatever else, you can do that. You can set that up. It'll deploy also all of your stuff, your themes, your pages, your content, like everything you want. So basically it just takes a snapshot, moves it onto development, takes another snapshot, moves it onto staging, takes another snapshot, moves it onto like production, like, you know, you just keep moving on. So it looks fairly full featured, especially for deploying something as esoteric and, odd as WordPress. But, yeah, it looks...
Isn't everybody just on WordPress.org? Who has to deploy that?
Well, WordPress.org does have some areas that you can't really modify too much. So if you're trying to do like some really crazy shit, you know, you'll have to run it yourself, run your own WordPress. Which, from what I've heard, is just like amazingly hard.
I was giving like a lightning talk someplace, and somebody, this is like, you know, the places where they say it's like, oh, it's a web design like meetup or talk or whatever, and it's really just a bunch of like fucking marketing people who show up or people who work in offices who also have to do a HTML website. And we were showing off Forest and stuff, and they asked if it was on WordPress.
It was on WordPress.
And over the laugh or cry.
Yeah, something like that.
What's a simple... Oh, Simple Bits. What's he talking about? Mobile first stuff and adaptive design.
Yeah, this is adaptive. So there's a lot of stuff on here, really. I mean, this is like one of those things you need to go read and just find out that we didn't know what the fuck we were talking about. But I mean, basically, it's basically just about how everything has now become this adaptive, mobile first, responsive kind of thing, right? And like we've kind of really changed the paradigm of how everybody thinks about building websites.
Yeah,
and it happened fairly quickly. I mean, if you think about like how long it took to get people to stop using tables, stop using Flash, stop using image maps, and start building everything as actual markup in CSS, right? That took quite a while. Probably 10 years to get people to really stop doing it. Nobody really teaches table-based layouts anymore.
You
right?
need to go step on a college campus again. Table-based layouts and Dreamweaver.
No, they still exist. I'm not saying they don't. I'm just saying it's not... It would be hard to go into Barnes & Noble, right, and go find a book on the shelves that doesn't mention div-based layouts.
Probably. Right? But they will talk about the magnificence of Flash-based design.
Oh, I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. But those are aimed at the people that are too dumb to know better.
Have you? Is the last site you worked on, was it mobile first designed?
No.
I agree.
The reason it wasn't is, I don't know. I don't think that way yet. I'm working on it. Like, I'm trying to get more, like, in that mindset. But I'm still like, I work on a desktop. I work on a
I don't even
a
like laptop. Mobile design. What I want coming to my mobile is the print style sheet.
It depends. I mean, like, it was really nice having, while I was at DjangoCon, having, like, the DjangoCon website open and Mobile Safari on my phone, the schedule open. And it was somewhat adaptive. It could have been more adaptive, but it was somewhat adaptive. So it was, like, pretty easy to see, like, what's coming up next, what room it's in, stuff like that, right? Like, that was kind of nice. But it could have probably been the print style sheet and been just as good.
Right.
So, I don't know. But anyway, it worked. It worked. Right? So, let's move on. Next one. Next one is from The Atlantic. These next two actually go together. The Atlantic...
Known for all of its design and development...
Yes. Alexis Madrigal from The Atlantic was talking to Dan Russell. Dan Russell is a search anthropologist at Google.
Right.
And so he's talking about, like, all the random stuff, all the tests that this guy does. And the guy drops that 90% of the U.S. internet population does not know how to use Control or Command F to find a word in a document or
web. Fuck them. Survival of the fittest, then.
And this is a sample size of thousands. And it says that he'll do these field studies, and he'll be in somebody's house, and they'll be scrolling up and down through a document trying to find, like, the item that they're looking for.
And these might be people you respect, no?
And then he's like, well, let me show you this little trick, and hits, like, Command F, and then types in the word they're looking for, and they're like, holy shit, I can't believe I've been wasting my life.
Right, they're like, that would have cost me, like, 37 hours if I had known that since I was 10.
Right, but now, you know, now they know about Control F and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, that's, like, that's
you need really to stop giving out secrets.
It's really kind of crazy that people don't know that you can find inside a document. Like,
then that makes you start thinking, like, how did they copy and paste things? Like, how many people could have possibly been upset that the iPhone didn't have copy and paste if 90% of people don't fucking know that you can do Control F?
That's why the iPhone not having copy and paste was only annoying to, like, tech people.
Right.
That's why the iPhone sold so well despite all these tech problems. Oh, it doesn't do copy and paste. The average person doesn't give a shit. The average person is amazed that they can browse the web while they're on the subway. They're right. Like, holy shit, I can browse the web. That's it. That's the only thing that makes them, like, happy. I mean, seriously, I guarantee you, probably 50% of the average people that bought the iPhone, once they got Angry Birds on there, they forgot all about the rest of the features of the iPhone.
There's some stupid fucking commercial that is just like, and you can have Angry Birds and Angry Birds.
I find it really funny that all the new phones that come out, like, that's, like, one of the first things, all the new systems, it's like, look, it's got Angry Birds! And the iPhone people are like, yeah, okay, we got Tiny Tower.
My current job is very hard because there's somebody browsing Imgur directly in front of me and pulling up the type of pictures you would send to me on my chat message.
Oh, really? All right, so the next one is from Yahoo, which I'm sure will improve soon since the CEO is now gone.
You leave Sparts alone. She cussed like a sailor.
I think we should have her on the show.
You should.
Fun. We should. So this is actually research from the Ethnographic Research in Illinois Academic Libraries Project. Which watched 30 students at Illinois Wesleyan University and watched them trying to search for different topics online, doing research like for papers and speeches and things like that, right? And found that only 7 of them out of these 30, so 23 of them, were not able to conduct what a librarian might consider a reasonably well-executed search.
I'm so surprised that college students are stumped by search engines. This is such
a
revelation.
It's kind of amazing that search engine, or that college students, who, these are people like that are entering college now, right? They've had the internet most of their life, if not all of their life. And they aren't able to, like, figure out how to search a specific word on Google.
Dude, I send out "let me Google that for you" links to people like 4 times a day.
I know, and I do too occasionally, but it's just kind of surprising that that they're that bad.
Have you ever gotten people asking you something where what they the way they asked you is perfect for a Google search?
Occasionally, yeah. But I mean, it's like some of the stuff. Well, actually, I can make fun of Chris on this. The other night, he was like, "It's really hard finding chef recipes for blah blah blah." Chef is the server building.
Okay, I thought we were cooking for a moment.
Jim from
right.
That's Ruby, and recipes are how it builds things. And I was like, "Did you try searching for blah 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 minus cooking?"
Right.
And you do that search, and oh look, it comes up, but. You leave out the minus cooking and...
Well, I guess that's a good thing about DuckDuckGo, because doesn't it give you ideas and, like, teaches
a little
you
bit,
kind
yeah.
of, like,
but
hey,
it also works really well with, like, the minus cooking. I was having the other day for... there was something I was looking for in Django, and I kept getting Django Reinhardt music stuff, right? So you yes. had to search for, like, minus music, minus jazz. Like, I don't want any of that. I just want, like, programming.
When it comes to gyms, I find it easy, instead of even doing, like, the minus cooking or whatever, just typing in gym. Chef,
well,
gym,
yeah,
recipes.
You could probably do that. I'm not used to having to type in Jim because I'm used to a programming language.
Like looking up
environment that doesn't commonly get confused with household.
Your
items.
Titty face. The most common image attachment thing for Rails being paperclip, right? Like you just search for paperclip.
You're never gonna find that in a general search.
But if you just type paperclip Jim, boom, bananas. Right.
So Andrei Butov.
Butov.
I'm guessing that's how you say his name. This is how do I find unused functions in my PHP project? We've talked about this
all
before.
Of them.
Like,
all of the functions are unused in my PHP project.
None of them used. We talked about this before, though, about like you know how projects decay and you
yes.
end up having all these functions that you no longer use or classes you no longer use as you go through the life of a project. So this is a little PHP function that will go through and tell you where you're not using stuff. Ironically, this is one of the more meta-programming things I've ever seen from PHP, since PHP doesn't do meta-programming all that well. It's interesting seeing something that actually introspects PHP that's written in PHP. I figured he would have done it in, like, Bash or something. It'd probably be easier to do this in, like, ACK and just come up with some sort of way to tell it to inverse the search results. Yeah.
Probably. I agree. I agree that this is something I would never use.
Added bytes. This is from somebody named Dave.
I'm sorry, Dave.
And, yeah.
I always have a little private giggle to myself whenever I have to email somebody named Dave.
Do you?
Because I start off all my emails with hello.
Hello, Dave. So, if PHP were British. this is probably the most pointless link we ever had on the show.
But oh, this is awesome.
Instead of the dollar sign in front of variable names, it'd be the pound sign. Instead of echo hello world, it would be announce, and it'd be announce good morrow fellow subjects of the crown.
Yes.
The abbreviations would be different. Instead of str replace is int var dump preg match json encode or MySQL connect, we would have
and otherwise
string replace is integer variable dump Perl regular expression match JavaScript object notation encode and my structured query language connect.
Like
eloquence, instead of if condition else, we would have perchance, pound condition, otherwise. I like that. I like perchance and otherwise.
Yes, that's the first thing I caught on. Like, people should go check these out.
Yeah, I think, I like the switch one too. Instead of switch case and break, we would have what about, perhaps, and splendid.
Oh,
and
I like the
instead of default, it would be on the off chance.
I like the try and catch. Would you mind? Actually, I do mind.
Yes, some of these are very nice. Instead of die, we use cheerio. Cheerio! So yeah, I think... and then class and upper class. Class becomes upper class. Public becomes state. Private stays private. Protected becomes hereditary. And new becomes nouveau. I think this is wonderful. Okay, if somebody will provide me a fork of PHP 5 that actually uses all of these constructions instead of the existing ones,
you'll give it a go.
I'll write some shitty little project in it.
You might.
It won't do anything, but I'll write something in it. It'll just say, you know, pip pip, and then that'll be it. All right, Jonathan Snook. Open on Snooka. This is sizing with CSS's VW and VH units. So now there are viewport width and viewport height.
Oh, I thought this was
specify
like...
something. Yes.
I thought it was like car whiffs or something.
No. You can specify something as being a percentage of the viewport. Viewport. Not viewpoint. Viewport. Which is kind of cool. So if you want something to be 95% wide of the viewport, you can do 95 VH. Or if you want something to be, you know, whatever, then, you know, it's kind of a cool idea. With just like, VH and VW currently are only supported by Internet Explorer 9.
Oh, well.
So, I think it's a cool idea, though. I mean, it's, I guess you can kind of do this with, like, percentages if it's not inside a container, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then it just contains the size of the body element, but well, it's kind of neat. It's a neat idea. Let's go on. JSPatterns.com. Scripting Photoshop with JavaScript. See, people think we don't talk about design stuff. Look at this. Scripting Photoshop right here.
I didn't know you could do that.
I knew that you could script Photoshop. I didn't know you could do it with JavaScript.
Precisely.
I thought you had to do it with Python. Because I know it'll use Python.
Oh,
I didn't
okay.
You could do it with JavaScript. Or at least I think it'll be Python. Maya was Python.
Well Maya uses MelScript.
Well, Maya has MelScript, but Maya also has Python.
I didn't know that either. I don't know nothing.
I do believe Maya had Python before it had MelScript, but I'm not positive on that. Anyway, because I remember seeing Python books all the time over in like the 3D section. I'm like, what the fuck is this? And then I find out, oh, you can do. Anyway, though, if you understand JavaScript, and you should, and you use Photoshop, if you have to, you can script your Photoshop using your JavaScript.
I think this is how you should do all of your layouts from now, all of your wireframes.
I think so, too. I think every single person should be doing all their layouts in
JavaScript. No mouse allowed ever, even when designing.
Yeah, no, fuck mice. Just fuck them in their little...
They never got their answer to the universe and everything.
Exactly. They just... Well, no, they know the answer. They never got the question.
Right, okay.
The answer to the question of life, the universe, and everything is 42. 42. They don't know what the question of life, the universe, and everything is.
Oh, I thought that was the question.
No, the answer is 42. They don't know the question.
Okay. Alex Trebek is hiding the question someplace.
Right. Well, and according to Arthur Dent, the question is, what is 6 times 7? He's right. But, yeah. So, Simply Accessible. This is from Derek Featherstone. And it's an article about accessibility and HTML5 block links. HTML5 has this ability, we've talked about it before, that it's perfectly valid to put an anchor tag around like an H3 or a div or whatever, which then makes that entire element a clickable link, which is kind of cool.
Right.
Right. So he goes over the accessibility,
to do it.
How well this thing works. And the content gets read out twice in certain situations, which is... You know, it's okay. Better twice than not at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they've got, you know, some different concerns. But he says, for now, it works relatively well. It's still relatively accessible. You know, and you can do it. Don't spurn this new ability because you're like, oh, it won't be accessible. Because it apparently is.
Yes.
So that's good. You're not feeling it today, are you?
Oh, I'm excited. I'm totally excited.
This is from the Bamboo blog, which is almost as good as the Bob Loblaw blog.
Yes.
the Bamboo blog. This is from Oliverne, and it is about degradable JavaScript applications using HTML5's push state. So this is all about HTML5 push state and replace state.
Isn't that for and doing then, like history stuff, right?
It is, yes. It's for doing history fuckery, basically.
I wish I could make that the name.
You've got on pop state, location.hash, you know, stuff. But then it dives into using davis.js and sammy.js, which will kind of handle all this for you in a bit more all-inclusive way.
Sammy davis.js?
No, sammy.js and davis.js. They're two different libraries. Yeah. They do basically the same thing, I do believe. But Sammy.js, I do believe, uses the hash, and Davis.js uses push state instead of the location hash. So Davis.js is a little bit more forward-thinking, but Sammy probably works a few more places.
Right.
And then they go into using reasonable templates for dryer code with stuff like mustache or handlebars or whatever. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff in here. And reasonable templates and stuff like that.
I believe it's useful. Sammy. I believe you will learn things.
You might certainly learn something if you were to read this. So the last few items here are actually not related to us at all. The first one is from Cincha, from CinchaCon, actually, 2011. This is the Share Contest. It's an app contest. Over $50,000 in prizes. First place is a brand new 2011 Nissan Leaf. Sadly, you only have until the 23rd to get something entered, so you've got about 11 days.
Why didn't you start earlier? Why are you just getting on now?
Yeah, what the hell, people? You should have been working on this forever. So, anyway, the first place is a 2011 Nissan Leaf. Second place is $10,000 and a MacBook Pro. Third place is $2,500 and an iPad 2.
What am I supposed to make?
And then any remaining applicants of our top 10 who do not place will receive a $1,500 cash prize, which is pretty nice. So what are you supposed to make? You're actually kind of wide open on this. You're supposed to use EXTJS and or CinchaTouch and some cloud services to build something. Awesome.
I figured maybe since like the top prize was like a zeroed emission car, that maybe it was about like making a green app or something.
Yeah, I don't believe it is. I mean, they probably wouldn't hate it if you did that.
They'd be like, oh my god, it's a conscientious app. Fuck this.
Yeah. But no, it's that has nothing to do with it. You just have to use EXTJS and or CinchaTouch. And then use the Cintra.io cloud service. So you make something cool. And then it's got to be functional. So, you know, that's kind of important. And then it should have a very nice, pleasing user experience. And that's pretty much it. That's the whole requirements. So far, you can compete as an individual or as a team of up to 4 members. You've got to submit before September 23rd. And judging will be done on October 15th.
That just reminded me that Rails
finalists will be announced on October 24th.
Still doesn't have any dates.
Yeah,
it makes me angry.
That's what you get, man. But anyway, though, that's if you know Cincha stuff, should be pretty easy to enter this. I have a feeling since they're saying the remaining applicants of our top 10 who do not place will receive blah blah blah, they're probably not expecting too many entrants.
Yeah, so get in there.
You might have a really good chance.
oh, actually, I'm just looking up now. Rails Rumble has been delayed. And they're going to try and get a date in early 2012. They're getting new organizers in on it.
Wow, that's quite a delay.
And this was posted today, so we got breaking news up in here. Finally, something on the show that is current.
Holy shit. So, next one is Unmatched Style, and it's a new little contest called the CSS Off. This is kind of neat. It's a competition for front-end developers to show off their skills in a no-holds-barred display of CSS and markup skills.
Uh-oh.
On October 20th, you'll be sent a beautiful PSD designed by Paravel, people behind Lettering.js, where you'll be tasked with applying some serious mojo to win some great prizes. You have to sign up now to compete.
It's like doing a CSS Zen?
A little bit. Basically, they're going to send you the PSD, right? You've got to cut it up, code it up, do whatever the fuck you want to do. Submit your work, and then whoever, I guess, is considered to be the most awesome, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then they will win prizes. The judges, as they stand right now, Chris Coyer, Ethan Marcotte, Christopher Schmidt, Jason Beard, Denise Jacobs, J.D. Grapham, Jonathan LeBlanc, Nikki Brown, Dan Denny, and Jay Berry. And then Paravel, they're the ones that are creating the site you're going to use. That's Trent Walton, Reagan Ray, and Dave Rupert. So, looks pretty cool. It's got some pretty decent sponsors.
I'm kind of excited about this.
Grand prize, one winner gets a MacBook Air, a bona fide account from WooFo, a year of time tracking and online invoicing from Harvest, one pass to your choice of online conferences in 2012, Environments for Humans, and the CSS Summit, $100 for stickers from Sticker Mule, and $50 font vouchers from FontDeck.
In the future, I suggest that whenever we're talking about prizes for these things, we only mention the things that are actually tangible and real. Grand prize gets a MacBook Air. Everybody else gets coupons.
They get the MacBook Air, they get stickers, they get a font voucher, and they get a pass to an online conference.
They get coupons.
Yeah, it's coupons, but still not too bad. So second and third place don't win anything solid in Mike's judgment.
They get some stickers.
The top 10 account get a free 1-year starter account to Envision as well. And then 25 runner-ups. That's about it, really. They don't really get anything.
25 runner-ups. Chris Coyer comes to your house, but you have to cook him a meal.
So he comes to your house and eats everything.
He comes to your house and eats your children.
So scoring looks pretty good. There's going to be 3 judges selected randomly if a tie occurs. Let's see. You get judged on cleanliness, semantics, validation, how well it matches the original design, places where you made a good choice. So something that can't be necessarily done, but you made your choice to decide, you know.
Right.
I can't do this, so I'm going to do this thing instead. Interactions, modern browser support, legacy browser support, overall project size, resource optimization, responsive implementation, and maximum score is $100. So you only have to create one page from the mock-up. It's a single-page website, so it would be kind of hard to make more than one page. Everything present in the design has to be in your finished design. You can add some more stuff if you want. Rollover states aren't provided, so you got to come up with them yourself. It has to be released under a Creative Commons license.
If you don't like that, rules.
If you don't like that, don't enter. Low file size is important. They don't want to be downloading 10 megabyte zip files, which is logical. The fonts that are being used are, looks like, web fonts, so you can go get them from somewhere else. Code can mostly validate, via the W3C online validation services. Doesn't have to be perfect, but should be pretty darn close. They're going to decide what close means. The index.html file is required. You should be using CSS for the design. What the fuck else you want to do?
And on and on.
Yeah, on and on and on. There's 14 fucking rules here.
Yes. What they don't tell you, though, is that Chris Coyer, while being a judge, is also a competitor, so no one's going to win.
Yeah, you're all going to win. But hey, you know, at least you entered, right?
Yeah. You came, you saw, you were conquered.
Something like that. There's something in there that's like, you know, well, at least you were there. Yeah. Okay, so, and then the last one is a list. It's a list of upcoming web design and development conferences in 2011 and 2012 from Smashing Magazine. Some of these look a lot more interesting than others. Flash on the Beach, which is currently going on over in Brighton, UK. I don't know.
Just go through and look at them. We don't need to read them all out.
I like the Jackie Brown logo there. That's kind of cool.
Wait, oh, I like this one, though. There's a back to the front. I guess it's for front end, but it's got Back to the Future logo. Back to the front.
Nice. There's the Kings of Code conference coming up in Amsterdam, conference for web developers. That looks interesting. Not really amazing. But
oh, and there's Adobe still trying to do their Max conferences. Silly yeah. Bitches.
Speaking of Adobe, I haven't linked to it.
And it's at Nokia Theater.
I'm not going to link to it. I haven't linked to it. We're just going to ignore the fact that it exists, but we're going to talk about it. They recently launched the beta of their new HTML5 CSS3 show-off site, and it's not using, like, any part of HTML5 that I could find other than the doc type. It's so bad.
It's just using all the friends, but they weren't invited themselves.
Can Adobe just...
Stop.
Be forbidden from making HTML and CSS. Like, they can do all the fuck they want
I don't
as
understand.
Far as Photoshop and Flash video.
I just don't understand the draw or the want. It's like you just keep trying to make something that has no reason for existing.
Yeah, like they keep making all this. They keep trying to make and failing to make all this stuff that has no reason to exist.
Yeah.
Like, it really wouldn't be that big of a deal for us to be using some other tool for HTML.
Pretty soon Adobe's going to get into, like, making 3D movies or something. Like, why?
Well, because they think they can do it better than Pixar.
Ugh.
Right? Right? Because they can. Because they can do anything that
they like. 3D movies go into the same bucket as people with slideshows on their websites.
Okay. I guess.
I was kind of looking at the Pishfrosh site today. I was like, I could put a slideshow up there.
You could. You could put a slideshow. I don't think you should put a slideshow.
No,
you can put
no.
A slideshow.
There'd be so many comments and tweets.
Let's not put a slideshow on there, shall we?
All right, I promise.
Let's avoid that. All right, that's the end of the show.
That's all.
You can find us at forestpodcast.com.
Pishposh.com.
We're also Forest Podcast.
Or no, fuck, pishposh.tv. Don't go to pishposh.com. That's not us.
You can find us Forest Podcast on Twitter. And you can email us podcast@forest.com. And actually, last week we finally made it so that the both of us do receive those emails now, instead of it just being Mike getting them.
Who did that? No,
you were the only one getting them. I wasn't getting them because
we weren't getting them anyway.
Yeah, only Ryan emailed us. You were supposed to read Ryan's email on the show too.
Ryan,
Jigglypuff.
Oh,
Gigolo. Remember you were like I'm gonna read this on the show.
I lied.
You lied? Okay.
I'll read it next week. Or tomorrow, I mean. We do daily.
We just need to send it over to Rigel.
Yes.
That's all I need to do. Anyway, that's the show. If anybody wants a DjangoPeople.me sticker, I have a shit ton of them left over from DjangoCon.
$5 so, shipping.
$5 a piece, and you know, they're like little bitty stickers. And just let me know. Later, guys.